Several months ago, I told you about going to see a movie called The Aristocrats, which is a movie that is about a joke. Just one joke, but it's about the world of comedy inside that joke and how the world of comedy has treated that joke. It was done by my buddy Penn Jillette and his buddy Paul Provenza, who essentially took some high-tech video equipment, digital cameras, and went and asked a whole bunch of comedians to talk about the joke or perform the joke, and it turned into 90 minutes of side-splitting comedy for anybody who could take the language. And I do issue that warning again on this day that the DVD is being released. And welcome Penn Jillette to the show to talk about it. Hi, buddy.
Sir, how are you doing?
I'm doing just great. How are you?
Good, but you're going to go to hell for all that lying. High-tech equipment?
Well, was it not high-tech?
We borrowed it from a friend. It was a DV camera, and I use the term borrowed loosely.
You haven't given it back to him yet?
No. It's been 5.5 years. the thing was we used, and, you know, but your point is well made about the technology. The Aristocrats coming out is more excitement for technology than anything done in King Kong, because we took, mid-level store-bought consumer equipment, and then they were able to bump it up and make it into a real movie. And, you know, Orson Welles said that movies wouldn't be art until the tools were as cheap as pencil and paper. And we're certainly not at that level yet, but we are at the level where if someone's got a really good idea, and, of course, Robin Williams' home phone number, they can make a movie that'll really come out.
Yeah, and that was really the key, calling people who you knew and having them tell you about other people who they knew who would do the joke.
We didn't even get much to the second level. I mean, that's only in the case of Billy Connolly and the guys in The Onion. For the most part, this whole movie is going through, the speed calling on my cell phone.
So with all of that and the connections, how do you end up with a DVD cover this bad?
I don't know. Isn't that astonishing? I'll tell you. You know, it's a Canadian company who bought it, and I respect them for that. And they're honest. They did a good job, but they knew a year in advance they were going to get the DVD cover. And I guess they went to, and I say this with no respect whatsoever, some Canadian, and said, design a cover. And they showed it to me, and I said, this is awful. This is appalling. I hate this. And they said an answer that I never expected to get, well, have you got one that's better?
Uh-oh.
And I said, well, I'm not the designer. I had an idea of doing a rather austere cover. Because, we were the second best movie in the New York Times, for the whole year. We were, number 7 on the NPR list. We made everyone's top 10 in every, intellectual type thing. So I said the cover should not look like a failed 80s teen comedy. But
yeah,
that's what they wanted.
Yeah, what's with the dog?
I don't know what was the dog. I mean, it was really funny. We got Saget and Sarah Silverman and Andy Dick and Jason Alexander to do a Q&A in L.A., and it was supposed to be about the joke and being in the movie, and they had the big cover up behind us. It was the first time any of them had seen it. So the entire hour and a half was Sarah Silverman, Saget, and all of them going, what's with the dog? What's with the cover? But, we are selling very well on Amazon. We're like the number 3 selling DVD. And I think the reason for that is on Amazon, the cover is so little,
So you're telling me if there were a big store display and somebody were to see it, that would actually depress sales?
For me, yeah. Because when I go in to buy something, I get something in my head that people are talking about. I go into a store, which is rarely, but I do once in a while, and I kind of have a sense of what the cover might be.
Yeah.
Like with the Aristocrats, I would expect it to be heavily like black and white or gold.
I thought it would just say the Aristocrats in script, and that would be it.
Yeah, that's what I would think. So you kind of have that in the back of your mind, and I don't think that I would look at the cover and go, oh, I can't buy this, but I might look right by the cover going, well, that isn't the movie my smart friends are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
My smart friends don't talk about, pure genius with Val Kilmer.
Which is longer, Penn, the movie or the extras?
The extras are much longer. I mean, and this is not most movie extras, deleted scenes that should have been deleted. But Provenz and I, we shot 140 hours for this movie and then edited it down to 90 minutes. So the DVD has 2 hours of extras for those who, you watch the 90 minutes and you just laugh. And all the rest of it is funny, but it also is a much deeper look into the culture of comedy. You know, this is a movie that's just a pure love letter to comedians and the people of comedy, and 2 hours more of just going, well, how cool is this guy? You know, 20 minutes of Carlin and, you know, and Saget and everybody going on and doing other stuff, and also tangential stuff, because as you can imagine, we asked all these comedians to tell one joke. All of them told other jokes.
Yes.
So the extras are a lot of other jokes. You know, Carlin telling the dirty doctor. And we even cheated on the CD. You know, usually you put on a CD, a DVD, and a movie, they're all pretty much the same. But really, we're trying to do about 6 hours of material on those three things and kind of pretending we're doing the same thing. Because there's just some stuff that you really wanted to see people's faces for. And there's some stuff that just the audio was fine, you know?
Does the DVD, when I saw you last fall, you told me about this bit that Kevin Pollak had done.
Yeah, that's on there.
You did put that on there?
He does Elbert Brooks on the DVD, which he only does Christopher Walken on the in the movie. But we also get him doing Elbert Brooks. And, you know, that's the whole thing. We went in and we promised people we wouldn't take more than 10 or 15 minutes. But, you know, Gilbert Gottfried did 45.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost everyone did enough that any three of them could have filled up the movie. So we just had a blast. And the only reason we're not putting out more is we just feel like those people gave us enough. And also we've told people this is great footage enough. But I think if we had to, if you put a gun to our head and said, how much good stuff have you got? It really is about 6 or 7 hours, and we just picked the next two. And some of it is, I believe, much better. Hank Azaria is much better than he is in the movie, because what we had to use in the movie was helping us with the narrative and the storytelling of the film. And when we have the extras, we're not stuck with that. So we actually were able to pick the best stuff out of context, because the extras do not have a context. The extras are just, okay, I want to see Dana Gould for a while. Okay, what else did Sarah Silverman do? And there's some people like some people that just did whole different things. They're very short in the movie, like, you know, 15 seconds, that we have them doing 3 or 4 minutes on the DVD.
Talking with Penn Jillette about the DVD of The Aristocrats, which is out today in stores and online here on The Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Did you do some of the editing, or was that all Paul Provenza?
Well, you know, we really did try to be honest with our credits for a change. And I'm listed as executive producer and creator, and Provenza's director and editor, and that's really true. What people may not know, however, is that a producer does have a certain amount of hands-on. Every time he would do an edit, I would take a look at it. We would have a talk for a couple hours about how this was, you know, what parts of it were really closer to our heart. What we did on this movie, and I don't know if lay people can really get a sense of this, but I know you'll know what I'm talking about. We tried really hard to not say what will work. Like, if we get another 10 minutes of Robin Williams, doesn't that sell it better? But try to really make it the basic idea we had when we were, you know, when two guys just looked at each other and said, wouldn't it be cool to have a lot of people tell the same joke and really explore comedy? We tried so hard to stay true to that. So many of our discussions were not, this is funnier here, but this tells the story better. And I get very disgusted with Hollywood, because I think they try so hard to please everybody, they lose the heart. And the movie that we're most like, I think, is March of the Penguins, because there's a couple different ways to make a movie. One way is the way Hollywood makes it and says, you know, Dukes of Hazzard, everybody likes, you know, large breasts and loud music and fast cars, and that's a name that everybody recognizes. We'll just throw it all together and please everybody. And then there's the independent films and the creepy films, where people like the two guys who made March of the Penguins just go, you know, there's no demand from the people to see a movie about penguins. There's no buzz about penguins, but we care desperately about it. And then they go and explore this thing and turn out a movie that I think we care about it, not because we care desperately about penguins, but we care desperately about the passion of another human being. When someone's talking to me, if they're full of love and joy for anything, you know, you've had that happen with stamp collecting and model cars and stuff you didn't care at all about, but you meet somebody who really cares and knows it, and all of a sudden you're totally swept up. And those are the movies that I always dig. You know, March of the Penguins, I think, was successful just because it's just dripping with love.
Yep. You know? And, you know, I've talked so many times about how you cannot do focus groups on creativity because people don't know what they want to see until they've actually seen it. And then once they've seen it, they don't want to see it 100 more times.
Well, the other problem is, you know, I've heard people make the argument that, that it's bad to mix science and art. But the argument even goes deeper to me in that it's not good science. Once you tell a group of people that we're not sure about the ending of this movie, you've told them we're not sure about the ending of this movie. And that changes everything. It used to be an hour and 15 minutes in, you go, I wonder what they think is wrong with this. Whereas when you present a movie like Psycho and say, this is finished, this is the way it's going, it's very different than saying, do you think it's okay to kill Janet Leigh off 20 minutes in? Where everybody's going to go, well, you know, no, because, you know, you go to see Janet Leigh, and I thought she should be in it a little more. That's not the point. The point is, when you lay it out as creativity, you know, I don't want to have a vote on how Picasso paints. I want to see a little glimpse of another human being's heart.
Why did you make the choice to not have you telling the joke in the movie or Paul Provenza telling the joke?
Well, I am telling it. Penn and Teller do a version.
Right.
Yeah. But
Provenza doesn't do a version.
Provenza doesn't, and of course my version is kind of tangential. The reason I'm in there is we shot me and Teller last, and I'm there to say the two or three things that no one else said that we needed to hold the movie together. But the reason Provenza isn't, and I pushed hard for Provenza to do it, because Provenza is, as you know, a tremendous stand-up comedian, and he certainly had the passion for this project. And he kept saying to me all the way through, he said, my telling will be the movie. My telling will be the movie. And I'm afraid I was dense enough that I didn't get that until the second or third edit of about, you know, 12, when I started to say, oh, yeah, if you had Provenza doing it, it would ruin the focus of the overall thing. Because you've got 104 people talking, and yet I think when you come out of that movie, you feel like you've seen one thing, and that one thing you've seen is that glimpse of Provenza's heart and all that he loves about these people in comedy. And I think if you put him in the middle of it, it would be in a certain way disingenuous.
And who is Flapjack?
Flapjack?
Yeah.
What's that?
One of the extras you have on there, some guy?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, what we did was we had a contest for people to send in their own versions. So there's one short animated version and one short live version that are just people that saw the movie and then sent in their own version.
Because you hadn't seen enough versions of the joke.
Exactly. to give people a chance. The amazing thing is friends of mine have overheard people telling it, you know, in neighborhoods where the movie was playing, in bars and restaurants afterwards, they've overheard people telling their versions, which I didn't really expect because I would think you see that movie and it's like seeing, you know, extreme sports. You don't say, you know, you say these guys are good. This might be pretty hard, but I guess a lot of people see extreme sports, then go out and, you know, get on a skateboard and try to do, you know, double flips. But I think it's wonderful that it kind of has that, that feeling of we can all tell dirty jokes now. And your warning is very important, and I want to repeat it, that if you've ever been offended by any word, if it's ever troubled you, really don't watch this DVD. It's just going to make you uncomfortable. And I don't say that in any way judgmental. I really, and I push so hard on this with all our marketing people, I don't want anyone to see this movie who's not going to like it. Because this, we have the luxury of being able to very clearly tell who's not going to like it in advance. If words offend you, and they do some people, then you're not going to like it. And on Amazon, you know, the ratings from people are all five stars, except a one star here and there from people who go, it's nothing but swearing. It's vulgar. And I go, what is it? You go to see Superman and then go, I didn't want to see a guy fly? You go to see Planet of the Apes and you don't want to see monkeys in charge?
Yeah.
We've done everything we can, and I really mean this. If you're bothered by that, say you like the Penn and Teller stuff, say you love the comedians that are in it, but you're a little uncomfortable with language, simply do not watch it and wait for the next thing. I do a lot of stuff that doesn't have obscenity in it. Wait for that and enjoy that. I mean, I don't think, I'm not that kind of Michael Moore, Mel Gibson crusader that thinks that everybody should see my movie because it'll change your mind. It doesn't, it won't change your mind, and it shouldn't. You should go there to celebrate the joy of a dirty joke. And if the joy of a dirty joke, if that phrase doesn't mean anything to you, stay away. Buy March of the Penguins. It's a great movie. No obscenity.
The Aristocrats is out on DVD today. It's Paul Harris talking with Penn Jillette. We'll come back and get into some of the legends of comedy who were included among this collection of over 100 comedians who either tell or talk about the joke in the movie, and lots of other stuff in just a moment on News Talk 1120 KMOX. Talking with Penn Jillette about the DVD release of The Aristocrats. If you go to Vegas, you got to go to the Rio and see the Penn and Teller show there. One of the stunning new things that they added last fall, or I don't know when they added it. I got to see it last fall, last time I was out there, is a psychic bit that Penn does with joke books and the audience. And just a terrific, terrific moment there that kind of sticks it to Sylvia Brown really good.
Unfortunately, that's too easy. It's a really good trick. You know, one of the things it seems that's important for skeptics to do is just to do better tricks than those who claim to have powers.
Yep.
One of the things Randy always did, because I was talking about this today to a bunch of people. You know, they talk about when gypsies, and I use that not as a racist term, but as those who earn their living stealing and do so because they were given that power by their ancestry, when they do that egg thing and they rub it all over the person and then break it open and inside there's a little blood and hair and they say that proves they're cursed, there's a temptation in lay people to say that's really difficult sleight of hand, whereas in reality the sleight of hand is really, really simple. And if you get someone like Jamie Ian Swiss, you know Jamie well.
Yes.
In New York, or Mike Close, who I think you know here in Vegas, one of those guys, that stuff is too easy for them to even consider. So one of the things we try to do in this psychic comedian thing is to do all the stuff Sylvia Brown does, but do it much, much harder and more convincing. And the techniques we're using are the same techniques psychics use, except psychics usually concentrate on one or two of the techniques, and we're doing like six of them simultaneously.
Yeah.
So that it has this thing that professional magicians always do, which is the canceling of methods. You know, you do a trick, if you do a trick twice and you use one method one time and another way to do it the second time, and those two cancel it out. Like if you can do it, if you can levitate something once by wires and once from a pole coming out from behind, then you can use that to, they could say, well, it couldn't possibly be wires because they did this. If you can use that canceling stuff, and one of the reasons that trick is effective is that we're doing that kind of stuff. The way I do it the first time is different than the second time, so if you're trying to figure out how I'm doing it, that hurts you.
It's a great effect, and you guys pull it off well, and at no time do you make any false claims about minors.
Exactly. Wasn't that amazing?
That was unbelievable.
And how come that isn't just the end? Why don't you just say, okay, goodbye. You had a nice career, but now you screwed up beyond belief. Goodbye.
Yeah, a listener sent me the transcript of that, and I immediately sent it off to Randy, of course, but not before reading it on my show and asking exactly that question. How can anybody believe this woman? How can Montel ever book her again? How can anybody ever think I'll give her money for any reason after things like this? I don't get it.
It's amazing, because even the people that claim that the jury is out on psychic phenomenon, which, you know, in the sense that the jury is out on gravity, that's true. You know, we might find something else.
Yeah.
But those that claim that, can't they at least let go of Sylvia Brown.
Yeah.
Can't the believers at least go, okay, she's bad, and we're moving on. What about this guy?
You right.
know? I mean, at least that would give it some sort of challenge. But Randy told me something when I was 18 about arguing with psychics. He said, when they win, they win. When they lose, they win. When they tie, they win. You have to know that before you go in, Penn.
Yep. And by the way, Penn is talking about James Randi, the amazing Randi, who Penn introduced me to about 20 years ago, and I've always been a huge fan of, and we're both going to be at Randi's get-together in Vegas later this week, the Amazing Meeting 4, which is just going to be absolutely spectacular, and I can't wait to get out there and be there. Let's get back to talking about the Aristocrats and sell a couple more DVDs for you if we can. There's a woman on the St. Louis Walk of Fame here on the Del Mar Loop by the name of Phyllis Diller. Because is where she grew up. And in the movie, you spent quite a bit of time with her. And I get the sense that just from the way you responded right there and the way you treat her in the movie, that there's a sense of awe about this woman.
Well, she is one of my true idols because she crosses over from artistic to also politically and also kind of emotionally. Phyllis Diller... you know, it's kind of like Louis Armstrong, in a sense, with all he did for civil rights, and then Miles Davis does this Uncle Tom thing. Phyllis Diller invented women in comedy as peers with men in stand-up. You know, she really was a peer of Bob Hope's. And the feminist movement, especially in the 70s and 80s, did this thing where they said that, you know, she was putting herself down and she wasn't really good for women, and they didn't seem to get the simple fact that Bob Hope put himself down and was the most successful person in show business
yep.
at the time. And so Phyllis just going into, you know, a 30-year-old housewife deciding to do stand-up is amazing enough, and then to be successful is the real mind-blower. And, you know, although she doesn't talk about it a lot, you can certainly find places she's as strong a skeptic on every front as you and I. She has never taken any of that nonsense. And what a lot of people don't know about Phyllis Diller is that she's accomplished an accomplished pianist, and not like Dudley Moore plays the piano, but like really with symphonies and stuff.
And loves a good joke. Doesn't just tell good jokes, but loves to hear good jokes.
Well, it's possible there's no bigger fan of comedy than Phyllis Diller. And when I first met her, it was just, I remember my mom just laughing and laughing everything she did and just loving her. And I also remember when I was a kid and kind of rejecting a lot of stuff that my mom and dad liked and being, you know, too hip for that and going into rock and roll. There was never a time when Phyllis Diller seemed cheesy or didn't make me laugh. She's such her own person. And, I'm tempted to sound like, you know, one of the Jerry Lewis telethons where you start doing hagiographies on showbiz people. But Phyllis Diller, many people I've met in comedy, I'm a huge fan of theirs, and I meet them as a person, and they're fine. But I think I can say this, that if I met Phyllis Diller and she had no comedy chops at all and had never done comedy, I still would have been in awe of her as a person. She's just one of the best.
There are three legends of comedy who are not in the movie, and you dedicate the movie to one of them, Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
What was his relationship to the movie?
Johnny's relationship was he enjoyed our television show, BS, and got in touch with, once again, Randy, because Johnny was a very strong skeptic and did a lot of supporting of Randy,
mm-hmm.
financially as well as morally and emotionally. And Johnny got my phone number from Randy, as though Johnny getting my phone number would be a difficult thing,
yeah.
and then called me. And it's really funny how the whole world called him Johnny. When he was on the phone with you, it was Mr. Carson.
What's that like, by the way, when you pick up the phone? Does somebody say Johnny Carson's on the phone for you, or do you just pick it up and say, hey, Penn, it's Johnny Carson?
Oh, no, it was worse than that. It was, hello, Mr. Gillette, very sorry to bother you. Have you got a minute? My name is Johnny Carson.
Wow.
And so somewhere through the first syllable, you realize it's Johnny Carson.
It's not Kevin Pollak.
Yeah. And he talked about that, and I because we had a long conversation, I told him about The Aristocrats, and I knew from my research that it was his favorite joke. And I also knew and was respectful enough that he had decided to retire, and he really retired. So I didn't even ask him to be in the movie, but he wrote me a lot of emails suggesting people for the movie, talking about how he loved the idea, really cheerleading for it. And the real heartbreaker was, you know, Johnny died a year ago yesterday. And I was at Sundance then, and we'd just done our first huge screening that people really liked it, and it looked like, you know, someone other than me and Provenz were going to enjoy this movie. And I had made a date with Johnny that when Sundance was over, we were going to go out to Malibu with the DVD, me and Provenza, and sit down with Johnny at his home and show him the DVD.
Mm.
And so the night after our premiere at Sundance, Provenza and I spent the afternoon in a Starbucks crying our eyes out.
Wow.
Because, you know, one of the things that was going to be the finish of this movie was showing it to Johnny Carson, because, you know, I had no doubt he was going to love it. And beyond that, I had no doubt that if he didn't love it, he was going to be supportive, because he was such a wonderful guy. And the other two are, you know, Buddy Hackett, I called up and told him about the project, and he loved it. And then on the phone, he told me two or three different versions of the joke and told me stories about it. And I said, "This is perfect for the movie. Can we come over and tape you?" And he said, "No, I'm busy dying now. That's what I'm doing." And so he just said, "No, I'm really old and really sick, and I can't do this. I just talked to you on the phone. That's great. I love you, Penn. Goodbye." And then I had the same conversation. I mean, so close to the same conversation, you know, 20 minutes later with Rodney Dangerfield, who told me great stories. And if I were the kind of guy who had his phone tapped, you know,
yeah,
I would have had those tapes, but I'm not that kind of guy, and it's illegal and immoral, and but I still have the memory. So working with this, with Provenza, a lot of what we talked about was Johnny Carson and Buddy Hackett and Rodney Dangerfield, how they would have told it and how they would have structured it. And then we found out from Owens, Gary Owens from Laugh-In, we found out from him that George Burns and Jack Benny were telling a filthy version of the joke when he was on the Jack Benny show as a kid.
Wow.
Jack and George were just freaking everybody out in backstage with all the people who are going to be on the show, just taking turns telling the joke.
One of the great things about the movie to me, as a person who's grown up being a fan of so many of these people for so many years, is that you have people who most people, you know, you think of Rodney Dangerfield, you think of George Carlin, you think of some of these other names that we've been mentioning here. Oh, yeah, I know who that is. But there are also people in the movie like Chuck McCann.
Oh, yeah.
He's just an absolutely brilliant comedic performer who does a wonderful, clean version of the joke that just made, it seemed like it made everybody in the room just fall right over.
Oh, we killed us.
But most people wouldn't have any idea who that was. Now, yeah. How do you get people like that?
Well, you know, once again, these were friends of ours that we just loved and thought were fabulous. So in the editing, we worked very hard. And believe me, when we first showed the rough edits to companies that were interested in distributing it, they fought us like crazy. And one of the things George Carlin said, when I called him and told him about the idea, he said, I love this, George Carlin said, "Penn, this is too good an idea for you to get. You're not smart enough. But sadly, you're the one that got the idea, so don't screw it up."
Uh-huh.
He said, "You're doing a snapshot of comedy at the turn of the century. It's a really important thing. All you've got to do is not do it great. Just don't screw it up." And I said, "Well, thanks, George." He said, the most important thing is do not take a penny from anyone under any conditions until the final edit is done, and then do not change it.
Why was that?
Because what everybody said to us after they saw it was, "This is a great movie. Let's put a little more Robin Williams in and a little less of the people we don't know." And Robin is fabulous in the movie, and we love him, and he did great. But one of the reasons Robin did it was to show that all these people who are funny are all equal. So in a surprising and maybe counterintuitive way, giving Robin more time in the movie would be an insult to Robin. It would say, we're not talking about pure funny here. We're talking about you being famous and making money off you. And so we kept it exactly the way that is, so that people like you, who are clearly the audience for the movie, people like you would be able to go, oh, yeah, Chuck McCann, you know, I remember kind of seeing him, but I never get to see him really work, you know.
Yep.
And you get to go through and do that, and then it's peppered with, you know, Whoopi Goldberg and Gilbert Gottfried and Bob Saget and Paul Reiser and Drew Carey. But in between are the people that might just destroy you that you'd never really thought about much. And I think that the idea that there's kind of one business that we're all in and we're all doing and we're all good at is so much more important philosophically than these are the bigger stars. Because every movie, you know, if Tom Cruise is in it, you know that Tom Cruise is going to be on the screen all the time. And that's wonderful. And that's the way movie stars work. But this is a slightly different thing. This is about two guys, me and Provenza, and our love for these people and comedy, and not our love for the star system of Hollywood.
The movie is called The Aristocrats. If you didn't get to catch it on the big screen, you can catch it on whatever size screen you have at home now, because it's out on DVD as of today, put together by Penn Jillette and Paul Provenza, a lesson in comedy and a lesson in entertainment in the form of comedy from over 100 people. And it's not just 100 people telling the same joke over and over again. That wouldn't have worked. These guys found a way to make it work by making it so much more than that. Forget about the dog on the cover and the terrible DVD cover. Penn is right. You should order it online so you don't have to see that until it arrives in your house and it's too late.
I'm going to give you, Paul, is I'll give you one of the stickers that I had made that go over the cover and say, Penn isn't fond of this cover.
That's great. That's great.
I had a few hundred of those made.
That's nice. All right. I'll pick it up from you when I see you in a couple of days.
Cool.
All right. Let me get any other credits we got to get in here. When is BS4 coming on Showtime?
We're writing it now. I guess it'll come out about March or so, but it's going to start out with the Boy Scouts.
Ooh, man. Okay. All right. And the poker book, the Dickie Richard book, was a nice hit a few months ago.
Yes.
And he's now got a radio show for this company, CBS, in about half a dozen markets. And that's also going well. And he's a proud new dad. And he's just too busy to be spending time wasting it on my show here this afternoon. So I appreciate it very much.
It's been a pleasure. See you soon, Paul.
See you in a couple, Penn. Penn Jillette, The Aristocrats, out on DVD today. It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.